Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hoth Takes. I'm Haley Bird-Wilt.
I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Grace Seegers.
And today we are going to talk about something that I have been talking about in stolen moments on this show for a long time. I don't think long-time listeners will be surprised, but we thought it was worth breaking off a whole episode to talk about romance in Star Wars. So I want to kick it off to Eric first, because Eric understands the history of Star Wars better than possibly anybody on the planet. And my question for him is this. Eric, you know the history better than I do. It seems like a lot of the expanded universe of Star Wars actually did hinge on a lot of romances. Do you think the new era of Star Wars, where I have criticized, does not have a lot of romance, is sort of a course correction from that? Like, is the lack of romance saving us from a lot of cringe? Do you agree with my long-standing complaint that there's not enough romance, is my question.
I'm so glad you asked this question, because there is definitely a lot of cringeworthy romance in the expanded universe. My favorite example is, folks obviously probably know that Han and Leia get together romantically at the end of the movies, and just like in the canon, they continue to be a couple after that in the expanded universe, except what happens to lead to their marriage is that in a book in the expanded universe, Han uses a weapon called the Gun of Command to, I believe it is, hypnotize Leia and kidnap her and take her to a planet that he wins in a Sabacc card game. And he's like, this is your planet now. But then they find that actually, I think it's Dathomir. And that's how we meet the witches in the expanded universe. I could be mistaken. I almost want to look it up right now so I don't go on to the podcast having gotten this wrong. But I do know that he uses something called the Gun of Command on her and quasi-kidnaps her and takes her to a planet that he won for her. And I'm pretty sure that it's Dathomir. I'm not positive. But all this to say, that is just one example of how Star Wars expanded universe writers were, shall we say, not the most modern and progressive in depicting relationships and power dynamics and consent in relationships in Star Wars. So I think there's something to your theory, Haley, that this has been a pitfall for the expanded universe in the past. And I think Disney, if there's one thing I know for sure, it's that Disney does not want to have stories like that, because in 2024, that is so absurdly incendiary that defines the brand at that point for a long time if you do something that stupid.
Has romance itself become, like, too political?
So I think the problem wouldn't so much be romance, but, like, a hokey kind of really problematic romance like that one, or at least how that happened in that book. But I do think that there's something to the idea of people want to see representation in all forms of media, and that includes in the romantic relationships. And as we saw in The Force Awakens, no, Rise of Skywalker, at the end of the movie, when everybody's celebrating, there is a kiss between two women in the background of one of the shots, and they cut that out of the Chinese release of the movie because they didn't want to get it censored. They wanted to be able to open in China. And I do think that concerns about reactions to depictions of love is fueling some of Disney's reluctance to put romance front and center, because you're always going to have somebody saying either this looks too old-fashioned and isn't reflective of modern society, and we need to be more inclusive in who we show, or you're going to have people say you are capitulating to those people and you are being woke and we don't want to shove this down our throats and stuff like that. So I think that it's a catch-22 for Disney. Either way they go, they are courting controversy. That's not, by the way, to defend having no romance or only having straight romance or whatever you want to say. I'm just saying I think that is something that is on the minds of the Disney executives who are charting the big picture of Star Wars. But I also want to say I don't think that Bob Iger is sitting there and telling the authors of Star Wars novels, you can't have a gay relationship in your Star Wars novel. I want to be clear. I'm not suggesting that that's happening.
I think so much of this, too, is like the movies themselves. It feels very like high stakes to have it commit to any kind of romance. So I'm curious for both of your thoughts about this. What you're saying, Eric, makes a lot of sense for me with like how they approached the sequel trilogy, especially what we know about like how they like sort of minimized Finn's role when they were trying to like get this to into Chinese audiences. I'm curious, like both John Boyega and Oscar Isaac publicly shared their frustration about their own personal like wishes for what they had hoped happened with their characters romantically. I think John Boyega was sort of on the Rey and Finn ship, and Oscar Isaac wanted Finn and Poe to be a thing. It seems like the actors themselves, like these are people who work in stories. There seems to be an expectation that romance be a part of a story like this, because it's like, for so much of human history has been, and it's like so noticeably absent when it's a movie written by committee or people trying not to like offend half the planet in some form or other. How do you navigate that, and how do you, because people are feeling the absence, I guess is what I'm saying. The actors felt the absence. The viewers, I'm sure, felt the absence. I think what Eric is saying about controversy is totally accurate, but like the stories themselves are lacking. So like, how do you balance that, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's interesting here to consider both the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy really do have romances that are core to the story. The original trilogy having Han and Leia, and then the prequel trilogy having Anakin and Padme. And for both of these, the romance isn't exactly front and center, but Anakin basically becomes Darth Vader because of Padme. Well, not because of Padme, because of his poor emotional skills, but that's another conversation. But then when you get to the sequel trilogy, you're right, there's not, it's like they couldn't figure out what they wanted that peripheral romance to be. And in a sense, I'm partially okay with Rey not having a romance. I would have preferred Finn and Rey. I thought they were really great together. But at the same time, I can understand having a female protagonist and saying, we don't want her to get embroiled in a romance. We want her to stand alone as a character without a love story. And given how unfortunately still new it is to have a female protagonist like Rey, that I could understand. Where they messed up, in my point of view, is trying to make Rey and Kylo slash Ben a thing, because they didn't commit to, well, Rey's just gonna be a romanceless lone wolf. They decided to shoehorn a romance in at the very last second with arguably equally problematic to the command whistle or whatever Han used in that Legends book. There's lots of stuff with parent dynamics and kidnappings with Kylo and Rey that we don't have to go into. So I think personally where they messed up was not committing either way in the sequels. So either Rey doesn't have any romance at all, or Rey should be with Finn. I think it's, you know, pretty obvious that she should be with Finn based on how they're setting it up in the first movie, just narratively speaking. Or Finn and Poe, I also like. That would be another great secondary romance. But I don't know if it's because they didn't want the controversy of dealing with an interracial romance or a same-sex romance, or they just thought Rey and Kylo was more interesting. But I think that the romance angle they decided to take in the sequels was just not the best angle they could have taken.
Not to be too cynical, but I feel like also the Kylo decision is the safest decision, because it happens for like 1 second flat and then he dies.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's no, you don't have to deal with the, like, the fallout of that in any way. Eric, I want to follow up on the expanded universe. I know Luke Skywalker has some romantic entanglements there. Is there any good in the way that the EU handled romance?
I think that Luke's relationship with Mara Jade, who's a very big expanded universe character, probably up there with Thrawn for a lot of fans. I think that's a really interesting relationship, because she, you know, Luke Skywalker is just a very difficult character to write, particularly in that era after the original movies are over, when he's at his peak of his power and his fame, and his his relationship with this woman, Mara Jade, who was originally, you know, an assassin in the employ of the Emperor. She was trained from a very young age to kill him, and he's eventually able to sort of get her to, much like he did with his father, to sort of see the light, no pun intended, and eventually they become very close and they end up falling in love and getting married. And she is a great example of a character who actually makes a main character better, because she kind of reminds him at times that, yes, he's Luke Skywalker, but he's also just a guy and he's fallible like everybody else. And she kind of she holds her own with him in a way that I think is very wholesome and healthy, and not necessarily what you would expect from like late 90s, early 2000s storytelling about, like, we're going to introduce a new female character to be the romantic interest of Luke Skywalker, of all people, the prototypical like main character good guy. And it's done, for the most part, I think, and again, I haven't read these books in detail in a long time, but my recollection is that it's actually fairly healthy in terms of how she's able to, like, stand on her own. She has her own set of skills. She has her own life. She's not defined by him, but she is also – she plays an important role in his life, and he values her in what I think is a pretty healthy way. So I guess if you're looking for healthy examples of romance, that's one of them, I would say.
See, I would love that to see that in movies more, or in more Star Wars media. I don't know if there's really a ton of examples of healthy romances in Star Wars that we've seen recently in the Disney era. In the last episode, we talked about Kanan and Hera, which I think is a pretty healthy romance. But I think it would have been really cool to see that relationship on the big screen and see that kind of mutual trust and respect and love. And that's, hearing you talk about it now, that kind of makes me bummed out that that will never come to pass.
Well, and you know, that is probably one of the biggest reasons why Mara Jade is probably second only to Thrawn on the list of people that Expanded Universe fans are like, I really want Disney to do this. I want them to bring her in. I want to see that relationship. I think in part it's like she was cool and she was a badass and whatever, but I think it's also like she adds a dimension to Luke Skywalker that we never got to really see in the movies, and that certainly we haven't seen in the sequels as well. She humanizes him. She keeps him in check. There's an interesting dimension to him that we never got to see. And she is, you know, for folks who have been following the movements to, like, get Disney to make certain things from the Expanded Universe canon, she's right up there, right? Sometimes on par with Thrawn in terms of how passionately people want to see her. There's no shortage of fan art on Twitter where people have just taken famous actresses and given them red hair and said, this woman could play Mara Jade in the next Star Wars movie. And it's because I think there's a, not just a yearning for, like, we want romance in Star Wars, but also, like, specifically, this romance gives us an interesting angle to Luke, which we haven't seen before.
Eric, that is such a good point about seeing other aspects of people's personalities. And maybe that's why I, like, feel the absence of it so much. The other thing, and this might be too personal of a question, but I am curious. I view it as, like, a universal human experience because it's how I grew up. But I so much, like, from a young age, wanted to be loved. And, like, was constantly thinking about romance. And I don't know if that's just, like, the movies I was watching or the books I was reading, but I'm curious if that applies to you guys as well. Like, was this a big part of your, like, childhood or, like, your adult life? Or does it seem to you that the characters in Star Wars not expressing any desire for those things makes them less human?
That's an interesting question. I'm definitely a big romantic. I've always been a huge fan of Jane Austen and rom-coms. And as longtime listeners will know, when I was 12, I thought Anakin and Padme in Attack of the Clones was deeply, deeply romantic. Now I think it's romantic in, like, the early 1800s sense of the word, which is, like, gothic and melodramatic and bad for everybody. I'd say I've always loved love stories. I don't know if I would say that not having romance makes the story less personal. I think romance adds a lot to it, and I, being a romance fan, always want to see it. I think all this is, it's hard to, I'm trying to formulate my response and thus stammering a lot. But I think there are other really important forms of love that it's important to see. And I think you've spoken about this before too, Haley, the importance of seeing friendship and how powerful that can be. But I do think there can also be an added dimension that romance can bring, specifically with two people and seeing them made better because of each other. I think that's really beautiful and meaningful. And sometimes it's enough to show that in friendship, because friendship can be that transformative as well. But sometimes you do want to see people falling in love, and that's really special and magical. And in a movie series that's basically a space fantasy, like, yeah, of course you want to have that element. The whole concept of Star Wars is very romantic. Luke staring out into the twin suns. It's just, he's basically a romance novel cover there. Like, there's a lot of heart in Star Wars. And I think that it would have an even deeper dimension if there was more of some of that element of relationship in other media. I'm not making much sense, but my basic point is, yeah, I think there should be more romance in Star Wars. It's not the only form of love, but it's a really important one.
Yeah, and I do think that it's realistic for young people who are looking at these stories to see themselves in certain characters and to maybe imagine, like, hey, if I was in that situation, like, I can't imagine that I wouldn't be, like, that I wouldn't feel romantic feelings for certain people, that I wouldn't act on them. Like, I think at a certain point, there are certain people who you can look at and go, it's really not realistic that that person wouldn't be manifesting any sort of romantic interest in the people around them, particularly given, like, the circumstances. Like, you can always have some excuse for, like, why they weren't meant to get together or whatever, but we see a lot of people who have to go through adversity in a group setting, and we know in the real world that that is sometimes a situation in which romantic bonds are forged. It's also a situation in which platonic bonds are forged, and Star Wars does a fairly good example of showing that. I mean, the whole sequel trilogy is really about how Rey, Finn, and Poe, who don't know each other beforehand, become really good friends because of what they go through together, and it doesn't seem like it would be a stretch to have at least one of those pairings turn romantic, because in the real world, that does happen. And so I think that at a certain point, when you have so little of it, you do almost get to the point of saying, is it really credible that in all these stories that we're seeing, that none of these people would have that bond change and deepen and become romantic in that way? At the same time, you know, it's tough to do with characters who are not on equal footing, because then you get into, like, I mean, I brought up Mara Jade before. There are some folks who really don't like the fact that her biggest contribution is being Luke Skywalker's wife in a lot of ways. And you don't want to have a character whose only purpose is to bring out something in somebody else. That plays into a lot of problematic tropes about how women have been portrayed in media for a very long time. And I think Hera and Kanan works really well, because from the very beginning, they're introduced as equals. They're both main characters. Hera is the leader of the team, but from an out-of-universe perspective, they are both main characters on the show. And so when they have a romantic relationship, however implicit it is for a pretty long time, it doesn't have that problem. It's not like Hera exists to be Kanan's love interest or to make Kanan a softer person, to shave off some of his hard edges, right? Like, that's clearly not who she is. And you run that risk if you introduce a character who is built to be that person. I think, you know, one of the reasons why there was such a good opportunity in the sequels is because none of them would have been that. Again, they were all main characters together, so nobody's going to say Rey is only there to give Finn a love interest, right? That would be an absurd thing to say. But in other situations where you actively want somebody to have a love interest, it can be difficult to do without making that person a two-dimensional person who's just there to be so-and-so's wife or so-and-so's husband or whatever.
That's a really great point. I'm glad that you brought that up, because that does kind of get to one of the difficult dimensions of structuring a romance. And I think Padme is a really interesting example of this, because in some sense, she is kind of a plot device, in terms of being her, what's happening to her is essentially responsible. Anakin takes it as an excuse for him to go down a dark side. But at the same time, she's also her own character, with her own political beliefs and desires and political experiences and super cool outfits that she wears in the gladiatorial arena. So I think that's a great example of how it is so tricky to figure this out. But I also wanted to bring up Padme because I think when you look at tragedies like Greek tragedies and Shakespearean tragedies, romance and romantic love is at the crux of so many tragedies. And so the prequel series, being a true tragedy of that kind, I think did a really good job of hinging on a love story as the device to really get the tragedy across. Thus, for the sequel series, when you leave out romance that does also kind of rid you of another potential plot development. And again, it gets into that tricky subject of, oh, but we don't want this character to only be the love interest. And I think you're right that Kanan and Hera are a really good example of this, of two equals being in a good relationship as separate people together. So it's a really messy and complicated question in a way that you wouldn't necessarily think when hearing the prompt, should there be more romantic love in Star Wars?
Curveball. If you had to marry a Star Wars character.
Oh my God.
Who would it be and why?
Well, you know, there's just something, and you know, everybody looks for different things in a romantic partner, but for me watching the stories, there's just something for me about Zero the Hutt's voice that just I can't put it into words, but folks know what I'm talking about.
He knows how to make a killer beignet.
Yeah, he could cook for you, I bet.
I think I would choose Padme because she is like very, very good at something that I think is very, very important. And I think if I were Padme's husband, I'd be like, you go, girl. Like, you're fighting a corrupt system. Like, you are standing up for what's right and what I believe in. And you're not taking any crap from anyone as you're doing it. And like, those are really great qualities to have in a partner. And also the gladiatorial outfit. I don't really think I need to say anything more than that.
I was going to say, you're so elevated to be talking about like the pro-democracy viewpoint and not her midriff. Grace, what is your answer?
So my initial first thought was Obi-Wan because I think there's just so much great about him. First of all, he's in the prequels played by Ewan McGregor, so he is very, very handsome. Let us not forget that. But
we never will, Grace.
How could we? He is smart. He's kind. He's compassionate. He has, in a lot of ways, something that would be great in a partner. But as we know from the Clone Wars, he does not have a great track record with romance. His only girlfriend, Satine, let's just say, spoilers, spoiler-free, things don't end up great for them. So, you know, he would probably be too dedicated to the Jedi Order. And so in that case, I don't think he could really be the one. You know, I do really like Hera a lot. I think she's so great. And very confident in her own person, and I feel like she would be a good partner. In this sequel, is there anyone I would marry? Probably Finn. He's just so sweet. So I don't know. There are plenty of options. My initial thought is Obi-Wan, who might be my true love, but knowing that we could never be together.
I don't know, Grace. I think you could fix him.
I could fix him. Yeah, maybe I could. Maybe, you know what, Satine couldn't do it, but he'd leave the Jedi Order for me.
I feel like I'm on the same wavelength about Obi-Wan, because I think he's just a perfect man. And, like, especially when he's older, like, I feel like he's just got a lot of his, like, emotional life figured out. When you say Finn, I feel like there's so much trauma that I wouldn't want to have to deal with.
You're right.
That's my thought.
That's true. Well, I mean, Obi-Wan's pretty traumatized, too.
But he worked through it. When I think about marrying Obi-Wan, it's like grizzled, old, sand-crusted
like
Obi-Wan.
Alec Guinness Obi-Wan or Obi-Wan TV yeah. show Obi-Wan?
Alec Guinness.
Wow. Okay.
Because he's been through it. Like, I don't know. He's
There's
like
a lot we need to unpack here, and I'm glad that we have a podcast to do it. Let's really dig into this one. So it's Alec Guinness for you, Haley. That's what you're saying.
Saying I'm attracted to him, I'm just saying, like, at that point he really has, like, his character, morality just really worked out.
See, I am into the Revenge of the Sith Obi-Wan, which, you know, right before everything goes to hell. Yeah, right before that, like, while he's in Utapau on his yes. little lizard, that's like, that was important for me. On for me.
That was really important for me as a child.
You know what? Gladiator arena Obi-Wan's pretty good. I'm not a huge mullet person, but we could make it work. I'm more of a Ewan McGregor, Obi-Wan, Mary kind of girl. I mean, I guess I see your point with the Alec Guinness Obi-Wan, but if I were to marry one of the original trilogy, it would, probably be Leia. She's great.
I'm going to throw a curveball in here. I'm going to say Kira from Solo, because I think I would like living that crime lord or, like, boy toy of a crime lord lifestyle. Like, I wouldn't have to work. I could just go anywhere
totally
I want. It would be wonderful. I mean, I'd have everything I wanted. Nobody would bother me, right? Because they knew if they messed with me, like, Crimson Dawn would come and hunt them down. So I'm going to go with Kira.
Yeah, you know what? Han really, really kind of messed that one up. You would be a great boy toy of a crime lord, I think.
Thank
Eric.
You, Grace. Thank you very much.
That's probably your calling in life, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know why I'm bothering with not immediately seeking out the closest crime lord and just offering myself up to them.
If we're talking about original trilogy, I feel like Han Solo with the suave and the just, like, confidence is a draw for me. Like, I don't know.
You like a guy who will, when you say I love you, you want him to say I know. You don't want him to say I love you. You want him to be like, yeah, babe, I got you.
Because he has, like, affection problems, but, like, really he does love you back.
So what you're saying is you could fix him.
Maybe he, like, grew up in Baltimore and, like, his family didn't, like, they weren't very verbal about emotions.
Is this an Expanse reference?
It's not actually, but I see why you're talking about the Expanse. At least there's some very good romances in these.
There's some excellent romances.
Which brings me to my question. How do you write a convincing romance that balances those things you guys are talking about? Where it's not cringy, where it's not these really weird outdated archetypes, but where, like, sort of reveals the characters more or puts them in situations where that's, like, interesting for viewers. Do you think Andor is handling this the best, or, like, Andor at least acknowledges that there's this side of people that exists, you know? But, like, I don't know. How would you write a convincing romance in Star Wars?
So I think Andor has an opportunity in season 2 to show us one with Vel and Cinta, because that gets to what I was saying before, which is when people are in these situations, they forge very strong bonds. There's a lot of pressure on people. There's a lot of raw emotion that comes to the surface, and people learn about each other in ways that they wouldn't necessarily in a white-collar corporate environment where you're putting on a mask and it's sterile. You're kind of keeping yourself at a distance because you can, right? This is a situation, you know, a guerrilla war, where in a lot of cases you have to be very open with people, very trusting. There's a lot of uncomfortable realities. And I think that it's very credible that that situation would lead to a romance. And I guess we don't know if they were already romantically involved before they got into this. But I like to think that they weren't and that they met through this and that that's how that formed. And I think season two can show us snippets of that kind of relationship. Unfortunately, even before we learned that they were going to do season two in this very weird way where it was like 3 episodes per year, even before that, it wasn't their show. And so they could never really be in the foreground with that extensive, deep development of their relationship. And that's only going to make it harder to show that. But I think we can see snippets of a healthy relationship. I guess my broader point is, if you're going to have a story where two of the main characters are going to have a relationship, it should be through that, or I think it can work well if it's through that lens, where they meet and they're in a very tense and stressful situation and their bond develops organically from that kind of environment, which again, we know that happens in the real world. I think if you can have a believable, credible spark for the relationship, that people can say, oh, I can relate to that. Like, I met my spouse at work or whatever, right? That helps you get past the, perhaps the discomfort of like, oh, they're just trying to shove a romance in here. You know, there's always going to be people and, you know, there's always going to be men who say that romance is only put into stories to get women to pay attention. And I think you can partly neutralize that argument if you make it very clear that this is very natural, this evolves organically from the storytelling. It's harder to make that argument if you can point to how it comes out of the story that is at the base of the storytelling. And so I think that's one key thing. It has to evolve organically from the situation that these people are in, and then you can weave it into what they're doing. You can show them dealing with their romantic side of their lives as they are dealing with the professional side of their lives. There are TV shows that do this very well, where two main characters are on a crew or a gang or on a team, and they also are part of, they're romantically involved, and that's like sort of the secondary side of their relationship, and you see it in flashes, and it sometimes complicates the A line, the A story, if you will. I think that's kind of a good template for a healthy or for a well-developed relationship in Star Wars.
Since we were talking about Andor, that reminded me of Rogue One. There is a mini romance between Jyn and Cassian that I've always found very lovely. And honestly, I would have liked to see expanded upon. But there's a lot going on in that movie, and there isn't really a lot of time for that. But I think that's kind of similar to what Eric was saying of a romance that grows naturally out of... the only term that's coming to me is trauma bonding. But what I mean is you're in a difficult circumstance. You are working on something you care passionately about. In this case, rebellion, and it develops into something more. I do think that the Han and Leia romance in the original trilogy provides an important prototype because they have some of the best tropes, like enemies to lovers is a very popular trope in romance, and done very well, I think, in the original trilogy. You have sort of a sense of mutual respect by the end of it, and it's funny. There's a lot of banter, and they exist as their own people outside of it. Again, beat a dead horse, Kanan and Hera in Rebels. Obviously a kid's show, but would have loved to see more of their implicit romance made more textual, because I think they also had a really good example of characters who are their own separate characters doing their own separate things, but also care very deeply for each other. So I think what Eric really kind of hit the nail on the head earlier, talking about how important is to have them be their own fully developed people with storylines outside of each other. I think that is really helpful when developing a love story. So if it's not supposed to be just a love story, these characters should have lives outside of each other. And I think that that is critical to any love story, just in general, but also one that could theoretically be successful in a Star Wars setting.
Can I ask a question of my own? And I'd love to hear your thoughts, Haley, as somebody who, you know, has kids, is probably thinking about when you're going to show them Star Wars and probably thinking about the relationship between Star Wars and the demographic of young children. I've always wondered whether in the Disney era, they're kind of afraid to include romance as a major storyline because they think that, like, kids won't enjoy it or that it's not really meant for kids, especially like a more mature and problematic or complicated romance. Like, do you think there's an element of, like, this is a kid's franchise, this stuff has got to be accessible to kids, we don't want to have the implication of, you know, adult romantic, you know, things happening behind the scenes? I mean, Andor did that and it was like, wow, Andor has an implication of sex, right? Like, I think that was controversial or surprising because so much of Star Wars is very sanitized when it comes to romance and what it can lead to. Do you think that that is part of the hesitation here?
Maybe, but not in the sequels. Like, I think Andor is so much more, like, real and gritty in that sense. Like, parents should have, like, discretion about showing that to their kids, versus, like, the cartoons. What you have to remember is, like, so many of the Disney, like, I've been watching, like, Frozen starts with the parents dying. Tangled has, like, a child being stolen by this scary witch. And it's, like, there's tons of really dark, like, setups for these shows that kids watch really early on. And, like, I've had to try to explain to my toddler, like, the concept of, like, sin and evil. Like, just trying to watch, like, Frozen, you know? Like, oh, it's a scary snowman, but he gets happy later. And it's, like, just, like, watching his brain try to process that is crazy. It was traumatizing. I forgot that the scary snowman was in the movie, and he really did not like the scary snowman. I don't know if you guys have seen Frozen recently, but so there's things that really do, like, freak kids out, but I really don't think romance is one of them. Because, like, most kids, either, like, their parents had some kind of romance, and I'm, like, obviously there's differences, and, like, some kids are in single parent households. I think, Grace, you grew up in a single parent household. So I'm curious for your thoughts about that, but it's like, it's not like the vast majority of kids are completely, like, this is a foreign concept to them. Like, a lot of them have parents, and a lot of them, like, witness sort of sanitized versions of, like, hugging, and, like, they're my parents and they're together. And, like, from an early age, like, the Disney princesses, so many of those are about falling in love. Frozen did it differently because, like, it was sister, like, love and, like, saving your sister, but there's still a romance, you know? So no, I don't buy that as an excuse. I think, like, the level of, like, realness in it and suffering in the romance varies depending on, like, the age targeted audience. So, like, Andor, I think, just, like, handles things in a lot more of a mature way. Like, they have prison camps, they have, like, torture, they have so much suffering that I think that other Star Wars, you know, content sort of only hints at. In the same way, I feel like, you know, there's implied arguments and, like, struggles with Han and Leia, but when I was a kid watching it, that wasn't what I was thinking about. I was like, oh, those two people like each other, and now they're in the trash compactor, you know? So, I don't know, I don't super buy that. I'm curious for your thoughts, Grace.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to frame it in that way because I'm trying to think back to when I was little, and I watched a ton of Disney movies. I loved a ton of Disney movies. Probably my favorite movie of all time when I was like five was the Whitney Houston Cinderella with Brandy, and that has, I mean, it's Cinderella, it's based on romance. So I lived in a single parent household from my very early upbringing, but I mean, I was exposed to romance, and even though that wasn't really part of my home life, I, you know, I had friends who had two parents and saw it out in the world. So, and I, like I said, I'm a lifelong romantic, and that includes when I was an itty bitty kid. What I really wonder, because I do think Eric may be onto something here. And I wonder if it's gendered. So if executives are thinking we want to market this to little boys because little boys are going to turn out and watch these and buy our lightsaber toys, and little boys don't care about romance. And because traditionally in marketing, that is, it has been very gendered. And a lot of movies exist to sell toys, and toys are marketed to boys more than they are to girls. So I agree with you, Haley. I don't quite buy that argument, but I do wonder how much of it implicitly is because they're marketing less to girls than to boys. And I think that's completely wrong and dumb, because boys can care about romantic love. Girls can love, you know, lightsabers and sci-fi. And I'm not saying we should relitigate this fight because it's silly, but I do wonder how much of that is just some lingering sexism in marketing.
I think that's a great point. I think maybe there is some implicit bias in my question, and maybe the better question would be, is Disney worried that little boys are not interested in romance, not little kids? Because I do think, again, there's no reason little boys can't find a romantic story valuable and interesting. But as you point out, from a young age, even today, young boys are taught a certain thing about like how they should behave and what priorities they should have in their life and how to interact with other people. And young girls are often taught a very different thing. And a lot of young boys are raised in such a way, not just by their parents, but by society and media, that like romantic stories are kind of soft and girly, right? And that's not what's exciting and like an action-packed adventure with sword fighting and shooting and space battles is like get your blood pumping like adventure, right? And I think we are still in a world where it is seen as almost a concession to like the female demographic to have a romance in your story. It's seen as like, we're going to take some time away from what this is really about to have some people saying, I love you, right? Or kissing, right? I think that's still seen as, by a lot of people, by a lot of men, I think that's still seen as kind of what's at play when you have a romance. It's, oh, the corporate overlords decided we want to try to pander to women, right? I think that's still the subtle context, or perhaps not so subtle context, for a lot of the conversation about how much romance do we want to see in storytelling. And that's unfortunate. And obviously, we all hope that will change. But I think a lot of the men who are making decisions and who are reacting to the decisions that are made in media do see a kind of dichotomy there, where there's the action-packed, exciting stuff, and then there's the softer, kind of touchy-feely stuff in storytelling.
I feel bad for not mentioning it sooner, but I do think we should talk about like Rose and Finn, and it seemed like they were trying to do something very real, which is like unreturned, unrequited love, but it didn't like seem to go well with audiences. I'm curious for your thoughts on that. I know we rewatched these like, I feel like it was 2 years ago at this point, so if you've watched it more recently, I'm not remembering it very clearly, but it seemed like Rose really liked Finn and maybe had romantic feelings. And I think she kissed him at one point, but he didn't really like seem to enthusiastically return it. And like, I don't know, that's a very real story to tell that I think a lot of like viewers can find relatable. Is that valuable? Did it work well? You know, that's my question for you guys.
I mean, I kind of found that the most disappointing element of that whole arc, because I loved Rose as a character and I didn't feel like that was necessary. It made me wonder if they were trying to set up Rose as Finn's love interest rather than Rey, and for not good reasons, not because of anything relating to Rose the character. And then because of all the backlash, I think Rose was sidelined in Rise of Skywalker in a way that was really egregious and awful, and I truly will never forgive or forget how Kelly Marie Tran was treated. And so I just think that this is kind of a weird case to ask about, because it just seemed like that storyline came out of nowhere. The idea that Rose was interested in Finn romantically, I had felt more like they were setting it up to be a friendship, and then she kisses him at the end. It's like, where did that come from? Why is that happening? Is it just because you've decided Finn shouldn't be with Rey, so you're trying to set him up with someone else? And then she is completely sidelined in Rise of Skywalker for absolutely no good reason. So in theory, in a vacuum, I think the idea of unrequited love is an interesting and important story to tell. This particular instance of it, I think, is pretty badly told. And I would say a better example of unrequited love, although it's not quite right because it was requited, just forbidden, was Obi-Wan and Satine, where they basically just break up but still love each other. So it's not that I don't think there should be stories about unrequited love. I just think that's a not great example of it.
Yeah, I think what both of those cases have in common is it gets viewers to start thinking about, and particularly young viewers, like, what happens when you like somebody but they don't like you back, and how should you handle yourself? And like, just opening their eyes to the fact that it isn't all Cinderella storybook endings with romantic feelings. Like, sometimes you feel a certain way and you don't get what you hope will result from it, right? Or sometimes somebody feels some way about you and you don't feel that way about them, and you kind of feel a little bit awkward in that situation. You're not sure what to do. I think it is valuable to show the totality of a variety of types of romantic feelings and where it can go. I agree with you, though. I think that the Rose example is just very disappointing, because not only did they do her dirty by not giving her a central role in Rise of Skywalker, but they also did her dirty by having her have that kind of last-minute curveball of romantic feelings. And I agree with you, Grace. I didn't see that as something that they built toward. I also didn't think it was necessary, right? I mean, if you really want to talk about Rose, she's in that movie to do something with Finn, which is unfortunate, but that's really why she was there. It was to get Finn to realize that you've got to pick a side. And to layer on top of that the surprise, like, oh, you know, she has romantic feelings for him, which adds another complication for him. Again, at the 11th hour, it's just another weird thing that makes it feel like you're just using her as a tool rather than giving her her own agency and her own depth in that story.
Say you're in charge of Star Wars. You're Dave Filoni right now. You can't, like, change anything about Andor, because we're all going to agree that they seem to be doing, like, handling this thoughtfully. Or at least hopefully in the next season. If you listen to the Hot Takes podcast and you take in all of this input and thought from the hosts of the Hot Takes podcast, and you want to introduce more romance into Star Wars, where do you start? Which characters do you think it would be most natural for? Most successful for storytelling, I guess? Like, what would be your priority?
Well, I know you guys like Sabine and Ezra. I don't really like Sabine and Ezra, but that would be a natural place to go, and they've set it up in the Ahsoka show. I really dislike it. I think that they have a better dynamic as siblings. But as Eric has pointed out, she at the beginning of Ahsoka, she's like wearing his clothes and being super moody about him. So they've set it up to be romantic. So if I were in charge of Star Wars, that's probably the direction I would take that, if I, you know, was not Grace, who doesn't like that. Other than that, you know, the other big marquee Star Wars product at the moment is Mandalorian. And I'm not sure if there's anything really there that would be good for romance. I am really interested to see whether there's any romance in The Acolyte, which is the upcoming Star Wars show set in the High Republic era. Yeah. That show obviously has not come out, so I can't pass judgment, but I think that it'd be super cool if that were an element in it. But those are my initial thoughts. In the upcoming Rey movie, I don't really want to see her have a romance unless it's with Finn, in which case I will allow it. Otherwise, you know, if John Boyega doesn't want to do it, and I think that'd be perfectly valid considering the way that he was treated. Otherwise, I think Rey should be solo. Those are my immediate romantic takes.
Yeah, The Acolyte's interesting because it's reportedly going to focus on dark side users. And so while we don't want to go down the path of like, let us show the Darksiders having a romantic relationship to try to humanize them and make it seem like maybe they're the good guys, I do think that it's a tricky thing to navigate, but you could show a romantic relationship among them that doesn't say like, actually they're good, they're just like you, but does say like, they are people. They're not the good guys, but you should think of them as people and not cardboard cutout villains. And that is actually an interesting way to develop the Darksiders in that era. I'll say for Ahsoka, I don't need the Sabine and Ezra romance. I do think that they have hinted so strongly at it that it just feels like if they don't do it, they need to have a very good reason, and they've kind of just dodged it so far. So that's kind of the best I can do on that. As far as Mandalorian, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if they want to start winding the show down and have it wind down with an eye toward the Dave Filoni New Republic movie, there's an opportunity for him to meet somebody or, you know, reunite with somebody who he develops feelings for. I guess that, you know, if you really want to go that way, going back to what I said earlier about relationships sometimes being forged in the heat of battle or whatever, you know, we could see something with him and Bo-Katan, right? I mean, I think there have definitely been people pointing to that as something that feels natural and organic. And so I wouldn't be furious if that's where things ended up with him. It's not necessarily like I need that to happen, but I'm open to it, right? I think that's a possibility, but they would have to earn it in the storytelling. We need to see him start opening up and being more vulnerable as a person before we can buy that, like, somebody as sort of self-confident as Bo-Katan would actually want to, like, you know, yoke herself to someone like Din Djarin for the foreseeable future romantically. So that's a possibility, but I'm not saying I need to see it. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about, there's another Star Wars TV show coming up called Skeleton Crew, which is, supposed to be kind of a Star Wars mixed with like the Steven Spielberg Amblin Entertainment, adventures, where it's a bunch of kids, on the run. And I was looking up how old they were to see whether that's something that we can start exploring with them. And I think they're going to be kind of like early teens. So it limits what you can do, but I think you can start showing like affection, you know, building toward romance. And again, going back to like young people, especially like 13, 14 year olds, they are starting to feel this way. So again, it's tricky to navigate, but if you can find a responsible way to show some of these characters having romantic feelings, it can be both like entertaining and enjoyable to watch, but also like it can be valuable for kids who are that age to see young people navigating those things on top of whatever other adversity or challenges they're dealing with.
What about you, Haley?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I have strong... I feel like Ezra and Sabine is good and should have happened. But I don't know how you make it happen now that they're, like, so far apart.
They can do the forced Skyping now that we know
They're, like, FaceTiming each other. He's randomly got his shirt off.
That's why they made Sabine force sensitive. You know, if that's where they're going with this, is that she's force sensitive so that they can do the Skyping, then I'm getting the popcorn.
It's a great idea. I do want to give a shout out, though. I think Grace may have mentioned it last episode, the frog couple in The Mandalorian.
Heck yeah.
I feel like that was peak romance. I don't know. I didn't watch. I mean, of course, I thought that Fennec and Boba Fett should have, like, fallen in love and been crime lords together. But, I mean, I guess that could still happen if they're doing another season, which I'm not sure if that is a thing or not. So I asked a question that I didn't have an answer to myself.
That's the prerogative of the person hosting.
Right. Do you guys have anything that came to mind during this conversation or final thoughts that you want to leave? Sage bits of wisdom that you want to give our audience?
One thing I'll say is I went into this wanting more romance in Star Wars, but not being necessarily as ardent about it as you are. And I'm coming out of it thinking that it's not just about like people who love romances in various media wanting to see that theme in Star Wars. There's also like a healthy like educational aspect to it. It is teaching people, especially young people, what good and bad looks like in human behavior, right? I mean, the story of Anakin Skywalker is obviously required by the story of the original trilogy. The prequels had to go that way because that's what they were setting up. But it's also, you can look at it as a cautionary tale about how to be a healthy person in a relationship, in a workplace setting, right? Like, there are life lessons from Anakin Skywalker's existence. And I think more romance in Star Wars can open more doors to, like, using this as not just entertainment, but also, like, imparting genuine life lessons. Like, I think the Clone Wars did that very well by trying to have every episode send a message to kids about honor and respect and honesty, right? And like, romance can do that too. I mean, this is a very intimate way that we interact with other people, and we need to be responsible and respectful about it. And romance can be both enjoyable to watch and also like intellectual almost, or educational in that way.
Yeah, that about sums up for me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Hoth Takes. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at Hoth Takes. I'm at Burdenator on Twitter, and Eric is at Eric Geller, and Grace is at Grace_Seegers. I made our wonderful logo and banner art, and Eric edited the show and put together our music. Although for legal purposes, we should note that all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.